And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 to noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Cavanagh with you until 12 noon today. As always, we have a packed show. But the core of the show, the most important element of this programme, is your views, your perspectives and your contributions. If you want to text us, you can do so on 086 60 25000. You can also call us on 07491 25000 0035 374 91 25000 if you're outside of the dialing area. We have Caroline producing and taking your calls, Anya taking calls as well, as well as looking after our social media this morning. As well as that, of course, you can contact us via email. It's comments at highlandradio.com. You can also make contact with the show if you choose by Twitter or Facebook at Highland Radio. On Twitter, it's Highland Hub. On Facebook, and by the way, if you want to use WhatsApp, it's the same as the text number. The WhatsApp number for Highland Radio here is the same as the text. It's 086 60 25000. It is a Monday morning. It is the 27th of March. And let's begin our customary look at the papers this morning by taking a look at the Donegal News. Mass exodus of staff. More than 170 staff resigned from Donegal HSE last year. Louise Doyle writes that almost two staff a day under the age of 50 resigned from the Donegal HSE. The majority of resignations were tendered by Letterkenny University Hospital employees. These figures secured by the Donegal News under Freedom of Information legislation saw 173 staff leave the organisation in 2022. Also, site work to start on a 50 million sewage scheme. Ishka Aaron staff will be on site in Remelton this week preparing to start work on a 50 million euro scheme there. It's been a long-awaited one. We have the Derry News this morning as well. SDLP seeking redress scheme for homeowners affected by defective concrete blocks. A considerable number of homes across Derry, Tyrone and Fermanagh are affected by defective blocks. That's according to Daniel McCrossan, MLA. The other papers this morning, the Irish Independent. Home prices up again as interest rate hikes fail to curtail demand. Worsening house supply is adding to the crisis facing first-time buyers. Latest house price index shows that story by Mark Keenan there. Also, DNA is not proof of who killed baby John. That's according to the solicitor representing the couple arrested on suspicion of murder in the Kerry babies case. He's questioned the validity of their detention and said he expects them to be exonerated. There was, of course, an awful lot on that story on the weekend papers as well. And those of us of a certain age will well remember that whole Kerry babies controversy back in the early 1980s. And it was fascinating to read over the papers at the weekend and then read all the coverage. I mean, I would have been in college when all that happened back in the early 80s. And it certainly was... It was not a very auspicious time for this country. Let's just say that for the moment. A lot of things happened in or around about sort of that period that you know, we cannot look back on with any sense of pride that this country did the right thing. The Irish Times this morning, results of DNA tests awaited in Kerry Baby's case. It's a couple arrested last week, strongly deny killing baby John again. That's a quote from their solicitor. Overhaul of planning system not workable, claims lobby. More planners and financial support are required for changes, says Institute. Serious concern in planning body over restricting access to judicial review. A story there by Arthur Beasley on the front of the Irish Times. Also, a lovely picture of Bosco Hogan after being presented with the Special Tribute Award at the 25th Irish Times Irish Theatre Awards. They took place at the TU Dublin Grange Gorman complex there, and a Bosco Hogan, just one of the great actors of our time. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Now, let's take a look at the Irish Sun this morning. Blue Monday, nation at fever pitch as Euros campaign begins. The nation has hit fever pitch as the boys in green prepare to kick off their Euro 2024 qualification battle tonight against Les Bleus. Ireland take on World Cup finalists France at Dublin's sold-out Aviva Stadium. 50,000 fans will rally Evan Ferguson and the lads to beat Kylian Mbappe and company. Ireland go into the match as massive underdogs. But a superfan has told the Irish Sun a surprise could well be on the cards. Kylian Mbappe playing at the Aviva Stadium. It's a fascinating prospect. What are Ireland's chances? Look, I'm no expert. There is always a chance. There's always a chance. Whether it's a good one, well, that's another story altogether. The Irish Daily Mirror this morning, Kerry babies probe again. Couple totally innocent. A solicitor for the couple arrested on suspicion of murdering baby John insists they are completely innocent. The man and woman were released without charge last week in relation to the 1984 County Kerry tragedy. Pádraic O'Connell, the lawyer, said there is no case to meet and he's called for a quick decision on whether his clients are to face charges. Now, he does make an interesting point, actually, about DNA, because, I mean, it may be, because I am no expert on these things, it may be that DNA may be able to prove parentage or non-parentage, as the case may be, and that too is also completely up in the air. But even if DNA were to prove parentage, that is a far, far step from saying it then goes on to prove exactly what happened to baby John. And let's always remember that at the root of this story, at the absolute root of this story, is a baby that was found on a beach with multiple stab wounds. And the question is, what happened to that baby? And until we can answer that question with everyone's satisfaction, then it is outstanding. Also on the front of the Irish Daily Star this morning, baby John probe couple innocent. It's the same story. And deluded Dwyer is still saying, I'm not a killer. Deluded Graham Dwyer is still insisting he's innocent of the murder of Elaine O'Hara. Sources say he claims he was not having an affair with Elaine before killing her and was trying to help her. The claims have emerged after Dwyer lost his appeal against his conviction for murder on Friday. And the front of the Irish Daily Mail this morning, again, it's the same story. Kerry baby's latest solicitor questions validity of baby John arrests, concerns raised over Garda actions in probe. Now, it's interesting that they're sort of billing this as the Kerry baby's latest, because that was pretty much the headline on every Sunday paper yesterday as well. The same solicitor questioning the validity of the arrests and making his own as he has clearly done, he's been quite public in his belief of the situation. So that's another one for consideration there. So that's the way things are looking on the papers this morning. It is, as we say, a Monday morning. It's the start of a brand new week. What are going to be the big issues of the week? Well, perhaps you can play your part in actually determining what those issues are. As we said, if you want to text us, it's 086 60 25000. You can also make contact with us via text. As we said, WhatsApp 086 60 25000. Call us 07491 25000. We can also be contacted via social media if you want to get in touch. On Twitter, it's at Highland Radio. On Facebook, it's Highland Hub. Email us on comments@highlandradio.com. It is 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. If you've been travelling in the vicinity of Ballybuffet over the past number of days, you may well have seen a sign that has garnered a lot of attention. The sign's on the side of the road. It says, potholes ahead, remove dentures, tighten bra straps. And it's been eliciting a lot of comment on social media. I had a good giggle when I saw myself on social media over the weekend, to be absolutely honest. And the tagline on some of the coverage is, if you don't laugh at Donegal's potholes, then you'll probably cry. Now, I'm joined on the line by David, who is well familiar with the roads this sign refers to. David, good morning.
Morning, Donald. How are you?
Very well indeed. David, it's a funny sign. We all got a good laugh out of it, but at the back of the laugh is a very, very serious issue.
It is. And I think it's kind of sad where we are today in modern society, where something designed to be a joke is something that actually highlights something that really, really does need to be addressed.
In terms of the potholes in the area, as we said, you are a regular traveller in that area. You know those potholes, you know those roads only too well.
Yeah, well, between myself and the wife, we do the school runs over there. So, you know, you're over it in the morning, and then you're coming back over it in the morning, and then back in the evening time too. So basically, you're travelling the road four times a day.
Yeah.
Look, it's been like that for about 3 months now, maybe even more as far as I can remember. I know it's been before Christmas anyway.
Yeah.
There have been attempts made to fix it, but like it's, you know, every time it freezes, every time there's a bit of snow, it just goes back to where it was. And I mean, some of those holes can be 3-4 inches deep in places, you know.
Yeah. In terms of the actual quality, is it just deteriorated in the past while, or has this been a gradual deterioration over a long period?
Well, look, you can't say it was a case that, you know, it's been neglected or something. You know, I do think the local authorities are doing all they can to maintain it up to a point. When you get the snow and the frost, et cetera, you know, obviously it increases the wear and tear in the road and causes it to break up. But I think they're slow to react and repairing it. Whether that's down to budget or whatever, I'm not sure. I don't want to say.
Well, I tell you, we have someone on the other line who can perhaps throw some light on that. Councillor Patrick McGowan, good morning.
Good morning, Dawn.
Patrick, you're listening to what David is saying. I'm sure you're all too familiar with the issues on these roads and the issues David's referring to.
Yeah, particularly on this road now. I'm saying to Caroline there, that stretch then is another stretch up at Coromona's, about 50 metres there. They wouldn't have been on the road programme last year now because we agreed the year in advance, but we had our MD meeting there 2 weeks ago and that there's been brought forward now. They've just cut some of the other roads and put them sections in. It certainly deteriorated a lot there at Christmas. We had heavy frost. There were certain parts done that is. In the meantime, what they've been doing is they've been using that stuff, what they call this deferred set. They use it in the wintertime. You'll see it in the back of the pickups. And they could sit there a couple of days and throw it into the ground and just flatten it. But it's just a hit and miss thing. Like, and you can imagine any workman going out throwing that in the ground. It's very frustrating for them too. Because this time of year, they generally don't use hot tar and chips because of the frost and the cold and the rain. But look, I know David's having there, everybody up there saying, and the problem is as well, a lot of people use that as a mini bypass of the town. So it's an awful lot of traffic focused on a very, very narrow road along that bridge. Like, and like even this morning, I've been on to them again. They just need to keep back. It is frustrating. And, no, and people tell you, look, they're paying road tax and they're entitled to a certain standard of a road. Like, and, you know, there's no excuse for it. It just needs to hurry up and get it done.
Now, we do know that there's very important works about to be done in Balbafay and Stranora by Irish Water, and that's going to be getting underway very, very shortly indeed. With that in mind, is that potentially going to put now even more traffic on the road, that even more people are going to be trying to use it as a mini-bypass?
Absolutely. Tell them about it. But you're right, yeah, there's going to be a lot more using that road and the other side roads as well to try and avoid the town. Because there's traffic jams in Balbafay and Stranora right now before the work starts. So where's all this extra traffic in that? Now, they are going to put on a one-way system, which means keep the traffic moving. But people frustrate drivers and sitting in long queues and not knowing what's happened. So hopefully this one-way system will work when they have it in the town. But as you say, both going round Logues Bridge and round Dreenan, places to get as something. What they intend to do in Dreenan and Logues Bridge is get a contractor on and put down that asphalt bitmack, you know, a proper finish, not a temporary one. And they need to do that before some of this heavy traffic is on it, because it is very heavy traffic at the moment. Now, there's no doubt. Like, and people are rightly complaining now. There's no doubt about it.
As you said, it is being included on the roads programme following that discussion that took place at the Lifford Stranora MD meeting just under a fortnight ago. How long is it going to take for that to be actually translated into work on the ground?
Well, we're told that they're looking for a contractor to do it, and then getting contractors, even any of them type of works, you know, stretches are hard enough to get, like, you know. But look, it can't sit as it is anyway. Whatever, even if they have to come in on temporary, resurface it and then wait for the contractor, but it needs to be, and it actually has to be hot tar and chips now. The fair set in a way up a side road, a bog road where you might get the odd car, might work and it may not, but down there it will not work. It'll just be gone within an hour.
David, are you taking any comfort from what Councillor Patrick McGowan is saying to us there?
I am. The main thing is that it gets done, but the problem is, like, do we have to put up a funny sign on every road that needs attention?
Yeah.
Again, not maybe three. There's a stretch of road just below me, and it's like a right down in the first gear crawl across it because the roads are such bad shape.
Yeah, well, no, I think in fairness to the council, I would say that decision, and as it happens, I was actually, I did attend that meeting virtually that Councillor McGowan is talking about, and they were discussing this in the council almost a fortnight ago, so I think in fairness, it wasn't necessarily just the sign that made this happen, but the sign is an outward expression of the frustration of the community, and it does have to be taken seriously.
Well, it's the sign that has us on the radio this morning.
That is a very fair point. That is a very fair point.
Do we have to put the sign up on every bad road we have in the county?
Yeah. That's a very fair point indeed. Councillor Patrick McGowan, I want to give the final word to you from the point of view of Donegal County Council. You've heard what's been said. As I said, we all got a good laugh from the sign, but it's a sign that points to a very, very serious problem, and it's a problem that if action isn't taken soon, is going to get worse.
Absolutely. And you know, from all the time I'm on the council, it's the same thing. And even before that, it's always about the roads. And people rightly tell you they're paying tax and they expect a certain standard of a road. You know, it's, I don't know what's the climate here in Donegal, that we have wet sort of three quarters of the year, but the roads just don't seem to last as long. We have questioned the quality of the material coming into that, even on the main roads you see them breaking up. Like, but look, I pass on the messages. I travel the roads regularly all around them. I go looking out on the roads and on to engineers and overseers and management, and it's down to management. The management need to make sure that we're doing best practice, and they also need to ensure that there's a fair spread of money. And that is a big issue, and you would have heard that time and time again, Donal.
Well, there's a plenary meeting of council taking place in Lifford today. I'm sure you're going to be speaking to various engineers and officials in Lifford while they're this morning and this afternoon, and I'm sure this is going to get mentioned and be one of the topics you'll be talking about.
Yeah, well, I just don't wait for meetings either. Like, I'd be ringing them every single day because the potholes and drivers won't wait for meetings either. It needs to be done. Like, and I do say, look, it's not down to the workers. Workers are doing their best. They know this deferred set doesn't last. It's a chance that it'll stay and it won't. But it's and these very busy locations, certainly, they have 100% right. And there's a few other sections around that area that are bad. And we did change the road program, as I say, just a couple of weeks ago. Since this time last year.
Yeah, one caller saying nobody uses that road as a bypass. It's the road you have to drive to get to the town if you live there. So says one caller. Another caller is saying, ask Patrick about the roads around Convoy. Is there going to be any work done on those roads?
Yeah, there's a couple. Look, there's probably, our area has spoken into three or four districts, and there's probably three, four, five roads in each district. And really, you know, what I say to people, I've said it from a long time, so people come along, go to your councillors and engineers and keep ringing on about it. And I would always, as long as the worst roads in each area are done, the worst roads in each area, not picking a road for any other reason. And that's and we have to keep, and just use whatever money we have, use it as best we can.
And again, a caller says, I'm a cyclist and a runner. I would usually go up to the scenic area of Cavan, Upper Killigordon. The roads around there are a disgrace, particularly the Glens Road up toward the steeple. There's water and muck coming down the road and flowing in front of someone's house. It's a disgrace in this day and age. That's the road I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Yeah, I do. Certainly, again, the busier roads will always get priority. Some of them are quieter roads, but the main thing is to spend the money to have wisely and keep lobbying for more money.
Councillor Patrick McGowan, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And David, thank you for bringing this to our attention as well this morning. Good morning to you both. And we hopefully we will hopefully see work done on that road sooner rather than later. But the council is on the case. And at this point in time, I suppose we can ask no more than that. Just got a comment in from a caller. Comment came in with regards to yesterday. Met a group of teen boys, 13, 14. I was heading out in a show, and they were throwing rocks and stones onto the road in front of cars. On the way back again, I met them close to the school. This is in the Inishowen area. One of them intentionally ran to get stones and threw them up into the air in front of my car. Luckily, none of them hit. Can parents please warn their children of the danger of doing stupid things like this just to be cool in front of their mates? And the lady in question says, if there's a next time, I will take their photo and post it on social media. And it is potentially a very, very serious issue. That's from a caller there. It happened in the South Inishowen area. Rocks and stones being thrown on the road in front of cars and into the air as well. Another person, attention, the residents of Knockard, please be aware, my son and his friends were playing football in the green area of the estate in Letterkenny. They were kicking the ball and ending up on the road. A passerby who lives near kicked the ball back to the kids from the road. He then proceeded to walk over to them and started videoing them. And a lot of people disturbed at this. It may well be that it's a totally innocent thing, but it's an issue. And I think anyone who is having contact with children, however innocently it may be, it's something you have to bear in mind that there's concerns. Now, maybe it may have been someone who said, isn't that nice? A good old game of football taking place. Let's take a video because it'll be a nice thing to have. But, you know, in this day and age, we have to be really, really careful about interactions like that. And it's always a little bit concerning when you hear of, you know, video being taken of children, particularly when consent isn't asked of parents. I know certainly I've been involved in various things in terms of theatre and sport and so on, and the rules around videoing are very, very strict. And if you've ever gone even to something like a community games or something, or a swimming meet with children, I mean, it'll be made quite clear to you exactly what the rules are with regards to videoing, and we do have to keep those things in mind. Interesting story in one of the papers today. It says politicians are so lazy in the Dáil gym. Fewer politicians than ever are using the Dáil gym, as figures revealed visits slumped to their lowest level last year. TDs and senators worked out in the taxpayer-funded facility just 119 times. The well-equipped facility was fully open last year after COVID restrictions were lifted, but representatives seemed reluctant to visit. However, the numbers are going down. Between July and September, just 14 sessions were recorded by elected representatives. Now, in fairness, between July and September, the Dáil isn't sitting, so it isn't as though we have a load of public representatives in the Dáil between July and September. So, in fairness, I mean, they're not going to be there on a day-to-day basis, and I'm sure they'll all be following their own fitness regimes at home. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. A very important issue in this county, and indeed everywhere, is that of the carer's allowance. We've had many conversations about the need for that allowance to be reformed, and a motion is being placed in front of Dáil Éireann by Sligo Leitrim and South Donegal TD Marion Harkin. And Deputy Harkin, I'm delighted to say, joins us this morning on Zoom. Deputy Harkin, good morning.
Good morning to you and your listeners, Donald.
Marion, this is an important issue. We've had many conversations about carer's allowance over the years, and I'm sure it's one of the issues you are lobbied about constantly by constituents and indeed by others. The time is right to bring this motion.
Well, I suppose in a way it's way past time, because if you go back to 2008, the income disregard for carer's allowance, and what that means is the amount of money that you could earn and still get the full carer's allowance was equal to the average weekly income in any household. And back in 2006, I think then Fianna Fáil government promised that they would keep it in line with the weekly earnings. From 2008 to 2022, there was no increase in the income disregard. So in other words, those on the average household income, which is a modest enough income, were not able to get the full carer's allowance. Now, to be fair to Minister Humphreys, in 2022, she did increase that income disregard about one third of the way. So my motion, which was not opposed by the minister, which is significant, meant that I asked for a specific issue to be dealt with, and that is that in the next budget, that is the budget that we'd see in, you know, 5-6 months' time, that the income disregard, the amount of money you could earn before your carer's allowance was cut, would be the same as the average household income as the CSO has obviously calculated it to be. And that at the moment is €900 for a couple and €450 for a single person.
You're also looking for individualised means testing, basically saying that, look, there are people that will have individual circumstances and you cannot make decisions based solely on the amount of money that is coming into a household and the amount of household income. There has got to be more in the equation than just figures, because this is about much more than money.
Oh, it is about much more than money. I mean, the various, whether it's the CSO or other surveys, the Irish Health Survey, calculate there's around 500,000 carers in the country. But Donal, just 92,000 of those get carers allowance. And included in that are about 43,000 who get half-rate carers. So you can see that the numbers who get carers allowance is quite small to begin with. And As I said, about half of those get half-rate carers. And it's also worth mentioning that about 67,000 young carers, that is carers under 18, get no carers allowance. So that puts it into context. And some of your listeners out there might think that, look, carers allowance isn't that hard to get. You put in a few hours here, a few hours there, you get carers allowance. Absolutely not. Carers allowance is one of the most difficult payments to get, in the sense that there's a lot of conditions, but the main ones are that you must be providing full-time care, which is a minimum of 35 hours per week. But the real issue is that the person you provide care to has to be assessed as needing full-time and continuous care because they are a danger to themselves. So you and I know what that means. If somebody needs that level of care because they would be a danger to themselves without care, you're actually talking about 24/7 care. And that's what needs to be provided for €236 per week if a person is under 66 and cares for one person. But on top of all the requirements, and I've only named one of them, but that's the most important, there's a means test. So that means that a very considerable number of carers who care full time actually don't get carers allowance at all, or get part of it, what they call a reduced rate. And when you speak of individualization, what that means is that the person themselves, the person who is caring, who is doing that care work, that they will be assessed on their own income, not on the income of somebody they live with. Yeah. Because the truth is that the carers allowance of €236 per week is taken up almost entirely by extra caring costs, whether it's extra heating or transport. It's not even as if somebody gets that money. It's just extra income to keep the show on the road.
You made a very important point there, and we've actually just had a comment in, I think, that sort of shows this perfectly. Caller says, my partner has cared for her mother for years, always got carer's allowance, but when we got married last year, she got cut off. What's ironic is her mother now needs 24-hour care, but there is no help. As a young couple, we can't continue on one wage coming into the house. She is saving the state by caring for her mother at home. Not giving her support to do so is just ridiculous. 2 points there. The point you made about a woman who was receiving carer's allowance is now cut off because she is married and her husband's income has been brought into this as a factor. But the really important line here, and it's the one we hear so often, it's one of the biggest cliches in the debate about carer's allowance. But a lot of the time, the reason cliches are cliches is because they are true. And it's that people who are caring for relatives at home are saving the state money.
Absolutely. And what happened in that situation was that before the person got married, they were assessed on their own income. But after they got married, they were assessed on household income. And what that means is that the person who cares very often has nothing, no income that they can call their own, as it were. And in many households, you know, income is shared, and but in others, it is not. And sometimes the carer, as well as caring, and as you say, saving the state that money, and I'll come to that in a moment, as well as caring, they have no income in their own right and are totally dependent on the person they are sharing that household with, whether, you know, their partner, their wife, their husband, whatever it might be. And the Citizens Assembly and the committee, the Dáil Oireachtas Committee on Gender Equality, have, after studying the issue, asked government to look at individualisation. In fact, to have an individualised approach to carers' payment. Because, you see, the issue comes from the fact that when it was brought in 33 years ago, it was seen basically as a payment to women, because at that time, almost 100% of carers were women. It's now 77%, so that's changing, but it's still predominantly women. So it was seen as a payment to women, if you like, to stay at home and to care for, to take on all the care duties. But that's completely changed now. The way we live has completely changed. So therefore, we need to individualise carers' payments. In other words, that the person who gets the payment is assessed on their own income. And when it comes to saving the state money, this figure would be in the upper range because it would mean that you would cost care at €20 an hour, and most carers would be paid somewhere between 15. Some carers are paid 12.50, or some even lower. But 12.50 to 17.50 an hour, about €1 billion a year. So, I mean, that's a massive sum of money if the state were to pay for care. But the truth is, the vast majority of families want to manage the care in their own home. The vast majority of people want to stay in their own home until the very last second that they don't have to. And to be fair to Minister Humphrey, she's the first minister in 14 years that did increase the income disregard, but it's not... She went one third of the way, but, you know, in that gap.
In terms of care, and there's an interesting one's come in because it almost asks the question, how do you define what care is? I mean, very often if it's an elderly parent or an elderly relative, it's very straightforward. If it's someone that has special needs, it's very straightforward. But a caller says, we've been refused carer's allowance, yet they accept our child is in need of care. Because of health issues, our child might be in school just one day in a month. Now, that means, as a mother, I cannot keep down a job because I have got to be at home to look after my child. Now, do I deserve a carer's allowance because I have to do that? Or because even though the state accepts that she is ill, they don't accept that she qualifies for care in that context? So there seems to be an issue here as to what the definition of care and what the criteria under which a carer's allowance is granted actually are.
Yes, your listener is absolutely right, because I mentioned there are a number of restrictions, and I only detailed one of them because if I were to go through them all, we'd be here until the 10 o'clock news. But one of the other restrictions is that the person you care for must be over the age of 16. So that means if you're looking at somebody under 16, and I think in your situation, or the situation, sorry, caller who called in, that would be the case. And that person is not entitled to carer's allowance. I mean, if that person wants to get on to me or to any of their local reps to see are there any other payments or assistance they might be entitled to, we certainly check it. But it is another example of how restrictive the payment is, number one, because the conditions are quite strict. And I mean, I don't mind the conditions being strict from the point of view that the person actually is providing, 35 hours care per week, because then, you know, people who might be providing just a few hours here and a few hours there would end up getting a similar payment to people who provide care 24/7. And that would be essentially, that wouldn't be right, basically. So I don't mind that aspect. But what I do mind is the fact that over a certain income, like the first person who texted, once they got married, they were assessed on household income, carers in allowance gone. And the other lady who contacted you, or the other person, I'm not sure, man or woman, who is looking after their child with special needs full time, who might attend school once a month, is not entitled to any payment because that child is under 16. There is also the issue of the adequacy of the payment, and that needs to be reviewed. So, you see, I suppose from when I started out in the European Parliament and I chaired the Carers Interest Group with Cathy Sinnott, and now in the Dáil, where I'm one of the co-chairs of the Carers Interest Group again, I do see that the whole caring has changed. Society has changed, and the way we live our lives. And one of the things I would always say from then until now, that if we didn't have family carers, if we didn't have people who were prepared to do what your caller is doing for their child with special needs, or your previous caller is doing for their mother, or I'm sure 100 other callers who could, or 1,000 who could call your station today and tell their story. If they weren't doing that, then, you know, the healthcare system would collapse because those people would need the state to provide healthcare. And if we, you know, the social welfare system would collapse because of the assistance those people would need. So we do need a change in how we view caring. Caring is not a women's issue. Caring is a societal issue. And to be fair, the minister has moved a bit, but she didn't actually oppose my motion of increasing the carers' income disregard in this budget. So whether that means she'll go all of the way or part of the way, I'm not sure. But at least it does indicate that there's a proper recognition within this government that we carers have fallen so far behind. And a final comment, because I'm sure you want to finish up on this, is when we look back at the bank crash in 2008, and there's been many, many comments on it. But one of the matters that really never got that much traction was the fact that family carers suffered because so many people were outside the income levels for carers allowance because we never increased the amount of money that they could earn and get carers allowance in line with inflation, in line with, you know, average household income. And at the very, very minimum, we need to right that wrong now.
But what we also need to look at is what the government's response is going to be. It's one thing for the minister and the government not to oppose a motion. It's another thing entirely for the minister and the government to actually apply that motion. And we've seen so often motions will be brought forward by opposition figures and the government won't oppose it. It'll go through and nothing will then happen. Do you believe that Heather Humphreys has both the interest, and it would appear from what you're saying she does appear to have the interest, but does she have the political clout and the support of her cabinet colleagues to actually go from being a minister who doesn't oppose a motion to being a minister who actively and, you know, deliberately puts that motion and its spirit and its words into practice?
Well, that remains to be seen. To be fair, the minister did say in her response, because I listened very carefully, that carers would be a priority for her in the next budget. I have spoken to her about it and I know she has a full understanding. But as you say, the real question is, when push comes to shove, will she be able to deliver for carers? Just, and it's important to say this, this isn't bringing them, you know, a step up from where they were. This would be just simply bringing them back to the level at which they were at in 2008. And that's really important to say. Will she be able to get the funding? I don't know. But she has said it would be her priority. So we have to wait and see what she'll deliver. And to be honest with you, I could have asked for more. I could have asked for no means test, and many carers would feel there shouldn't be. But what I asked for was something that in the current situation, I believe she can deliver on, you know, because she has already taken the first step. There's two more to take. I believe she can take them in the next budget. And then once we get to that level, we need to look at, we spoke about it earlier, individualising carers, you know, the income disregard for carers so that it's not the family income that's taken into consideration, and looking at the adequacy of carers allowance, because the government's own reports, not any independent reports, but the government commissioned a report on the actual cost of caring, and that varies between about 144 for the most basic to about 300 euro extra per week. Carers allowance is 236. So that means it doesn't even cover the cost of caring, never mind pay the carer for any work they do. But look, the one thing I can say is that between, from when I started out on this in the European Parliament with Cathy Sinnott many years ago to now, there has been a greater recognition of the invaluable work that carers do. But recognition is one thing, and nice words are another. but actually supporting them with a decent level of carers allowance and with proper respite care so that people get a break, we still have major progress to make on this. I'm hoping that the next budget will be the next step on that journey.
And as was pointed out over the course of COVID, many times claps and recognition don't pay the bills. Marion Harkin, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Let's talk about cycling. And it came up briefly in the discussion we had earlier on about those roads, the Mill Road and Swan Run Ballybuffet. But we're joined on Zoom, I'm delighted to say, by Niall Fox. Now, Neil, I think it's Neil rather than Niall. Neil joins us. Neil, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I take it it's Neil, not Niall?
Niall is Irish for Neil, so I
like that's who you'll take either. Yeah, it's always difficult, yeah.
My uncle is Niall, so...
Okay, that's fair enough. Well, we'll stick with Niall. So, I mean, you are involved with many advocacy bodies, but you're involved in cycle safety, and you're involved in cycle safety for a very personal and tragic reason.
Yes, I think I've been on the show before with Greg a few years ago. I'm complicated. I'm from Dublin, but I'm based in Waterford, but lived in Cork for a good while, so a bit all over the place. So I suppose road safety affects every part of the country. And my sister was killed cycling to work by a delivery lorry in Dublin City in 2016. So it's about 6.5 years ago now. It's kind of always strange as the years add up. In one way, it seems very recent. In other times, you know, it doesn't, like any bereavement, I guess. So I suppose since then, I've been involved in different campaigns with the Road Safety Authority, IRVA, and various groups as well, like Dublin Cycling Campaign, Cork Cycling Campaign, and that. But I suppose at the moment, I'm looking at something that's across the board, across the country. And that's why I'm trying to reach out to people in all parts, all counties, be it rural or urban areas. And it's to do with policing and cycling. And it's to do with having the same approach throughout the country to, we say, reporting of, for example, the dangerous overtaking of cyclists and things like that on the road. And just before I go further on that, The legislation came in 2019, as like similar to what we did call then the minimum passing distance. That's what people more know it as, but the official title is dangerous overtaking of a cycle or a cyclist. That's not a punishment for drivers. I always try and get that across. And my view with all road safety measures and the different laws that are in and rules of the roads, they're not meant as a punishment. Yes, they're meant as a deterrent, but they're really meant to keep all of us safe on the roads. And like the rhetoric, I'm sure it's the same in Donegal as it is in other parts of the country, is sometimes it can be like, oh, cyclists versus motorists and that. You know, the real reality is that most most adults who cycle also drive and have driver's license and pay motor tax and all the rest of it. So it's not really that argument. Like we should really see, and everyone has sons or daughters or people who cycle. We're all humans on the road, whether we're walking, cycling, or whatever we're doing, you know. But it's to create fairness. And I suppose the positive thing has been in the last couple of years, I should just explain a little bit just on the difficulties that people are reporting, I suppose, have been in touch with me and others about, have been people who've got been nearly knocked off their bikes and things like that, and I suppose that they're reporting of it to guards in different parts of the country, even in the same areas, has got different responses. So you have a guard in one particular station is very, au fait with the new law and what's involved and how to the reporting of it. And he or she will do it, no problem. And you have other guards who seem to fob them off because I understand why, because I don't agree with it, but I can understand on a human level why sometimes the Gardaí will think that, oh, well, maybe, you know, sure, there was nobody hurt in this incident. So, you know, do you really want to have to go through all X, Y, Z? But the idea is to prevent crashes on the roads, and it's to improve behaviours. So it is important that even if somebody hasn't been physically injured, that, you know, that the guards understand that the law actually doesn't require that. Just to be really boring, because I have it written down, I'm going to read it out just very briefly. This is actually what the law says. A driver shall not overtake or attempt to overtake if to do so would endanger or cause inconvenience to a pedal cyclist. Yeah. So therefore, it doesn't necessarily require somebody to be actually hit or to be physical contact. It's the endangerment and it's the possibility of a crash.
And what it requires is for the motorist to look at the situation on the road and to make an informed decision based on their observation and based on the situation. Now, you are setting up the cycling engagement group. You're doing this with the backing of Gardaí. You're seeking cycling liaison officers within road policing units, and you're urging cyclists and cycling groups to actually become involved in that process. Tell us briefly about that, because we are coming up close to a break before news.
Absolutely. I'll just give the email to contact me first.
Really perfect.
It's easy to remember. neilfoxcork@gmail.com. So neilfoxcork@gmail.com. And I suppose I'm appealing to all cyclists, especially just the regular commuters, to get in touch, because we're going to have a couple of meetings with the Assistant Garda Commissioner and other Gardaí, just hybrid meetings. So it will only take an hour out of your day, and it will only be once or twice. And that's to develop then the Assistant Garda Commissioner to bring up her own, have a body within the Gardaí with specially designated to cycling and cycling safely. Because I think it's really important, and I think it will improve relations and keep our roads a bit safer. So,
and you are getting the backing of the AGSI on this, and
the
they
AGSI
are behind
were
you.
Very supportive of it. Yeah, I actually brought the idea to them first before I requested it. Requested to meet the assistant commissioner, who's been quite helpful on it, in fairness to her. And I would hope that, you know, once it's trashed out, that it will become a real body, and it might only be required for a couple of years. Hopefully, it won't be required, you know, long term. But it's just to get everybody on board. Will also improve cycling behaviour on the roads, because I really believe that if the average cyclist believes that the guards have their back, that they're more likely to obey maybe some of the rules that they feel are an inconvenience to them as well. So it's improve every situation. And just as well, just while I'm on the air, just as well to say, you know, parking along the roads can be quite dangerous. You know that we tend to do that sometimes on rural roads as well. We just pull in and we think, oh, we're only going to be a few minutes of that, be it rural roads or urban roads, or in cycle lanes, obviously, but even outside of the official cycle lanes. And that can cause crashes. You know, it's just like, because it means that a bike has to go out into the middle of the road sometimes, and there mightn't be vision. But just to be conscious of all our bikes and roads. So
absolutely. Neil, it's been a pleasure. Neil Fox Cork @gmail.com. People can get you there and join that cycling engagement group for the moment. Neil, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thanks, Donal. Okay,
it's been our pleasure. And that's the first hour of the 9 till noon show done and dusted for this morning.